Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Today on the podcast, we're chatting with Mitch Creedy. Mitch lives in Canada, and they are passionate about several of the same topics that I am passionate about. And today, they and I are going to be digging into two of these particular topics. The first being online accessibility, digital accessibility, and the other being a very topical topic that is something that sadly many people in our communities experience, that of bullying, both within the workplace and within the community. So, Mitch, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's truly an honor to be here.
Well, you and I have been chatting for some time, and I thought it was about time we sat down and chatted on the podcast rather than just exchanging thoughts and ideas as we often do. But Mitch, you know, you and I have been talking for some time, but maybe we could start off by just asking you to introduce yourself to my listeners and tell us a little of your story.
Sure. So my name is Mitch. I actually was born in South Africa, and I now live on Vancouver Island in Canada, in British Columbia, in the province of British Columbia. I use they, them pronouns, and I am totally blind. So yeah, when I was about, I would say 16, we moved to Canada. And so it's been very interesting for me to sort of journey along the two different cultures that I've experienced. And so I love that kind of exploration as well. But a fun fact, I have a guide dog, and I also have two miniature horses.
Oh. And just as a completely side question, how do the guide dog and the miniature horses get on?
Oh, that's it. So they get along, but there's always a caveat with my one horse, Bitsy. I've been working with someone who does interspecies communication, and it became very clear to us that Bitsy does not want the dog in the enclosure with them at this point. Bitsy really feels she is there for me, and she's like, it's very interesting. It's almost like she's worried the dog's going to take over. But I mean, you know, Rosebud and Mario's the guide dog, will kiss through the fence and, you know, lick each other's noses and all the rest of it. Bitsy will just run away, go to the other side of the field.
Isn't it interesting the way that relationships show up, not just in interhuman relationships, but with animals as well?
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. I could honestly do a whole podcast on that.
Maybe one day we'll get the opportunity to do that, but it's not going to be today, I'm afraid.
Not today, no.
So I want to start off by looking at the work you're doing in online accessibility. Tell us about that.
So I have just finished a course with the Blind Institute of Technology, and it was a digital accessibility course. And what it's done for me is it's really made me even more aware of the fact that, I mean, I've always known that online spaces can be challenging for accessibility. However, I used to just get frustrated and not know what to do about it. Now I actually can get frustrated and be like, oh, I know why this is happening. and I can, you know, contact the company and send a very much more productive email. What I'm hoping to do with the course is to get into freelancing, maybe even some public speaking with companies to help them become more accessible and to help people care about accessibility. Because if I'm going to ask somebody to make a change, and often it's just a very small change, it might be like a label on a button or, you know, labeling your graphics appropriately and stuff like that. So when I'm asking someone to do something like that, I want to make sure that they actually feel a passion to do it. Like they want to do it. I have to get into their heart and make them care about it. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm hoping to get into an apprenticeship, but really once I'm doing that, I've got to take one exam and then I want to take this exam and then I will be having a certification as well.
Why is digital accessibility important for you? What do you think is the breakdown that we're facing between what we're asking for as the disabled and particularly the blindness community and what is out there in the world?
Excuse me, I didn't mean to cough there, but you know, I think that the breakdown is kind of just everybody assumes that because something is online, that it's automatically going to be accessible to me as a totally blind user. And I don't, with the accessibility piece, I'm not only focused on the totally blind, obviously, when I'm checking a website or auditing a website. But at this moment, this my personal experience is with blindness. So I think the breakdown is people assume that it's going to be accessible and they don't need to help, you know, in quotes, help us. And yet what they don't realize is that very often online spaces are not accessible. I actually know, so many blind people who are, you know, wanting to do an online business, but they get stuck because, well, I want to put up a funnel or a landing page or something, but I can't find a platform that's totally accessible. And so you even get people in, for example, the network marketing space. You know, somebody wants to make some side income, they get into a situation, they get into a company, and they decide they're going to do something with it. And then all of a sudden they realize it's not accessible. And then the breakdown comes when, you know, you phone the company or you phone an organization and they either sort of just brush you off, don't care, just push you onto another person. And so I think we have to start, you know, making a space where, hey, I deserve to have this. And it's in the US, there are actually laws in place. I'm not in the US, but many of my cohort in my class were. And there are actually laws in place that make it so that websites, you know, they can actually take legal action if a website's not accessible. Now, most people don't do that, but I think that's where it's just as important as physical accessibility, right? So it's the same thing that we're asking for, just on a different platform.
You've given some great examples of areas where you're finding that there is these issues of inaccessibility or partial accessibility. In terms of that, I mean, do you get the sense that it's deliberate? I mean, I sometimes get the feeling when talking to members of our community that people say they almost take the stance that non-disabled people are deliberately trying to make our lives difficult. And I don't believe that that's true. Why is there such a lack of knowledge out there?
No, and sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but no, I don't believe it's deliberate. Most people that I have spoken to about accessibility will say, well, I just didn't know. Or they'll say, you know, I thought it was just going to be really expensive to make it accessible. Now, I mean, the reality is, and the reality is, there's actually quite a few kind of accessibility testing tools on the internet. So I do manual testing, but there are actually tools that you can use to test a website to see if it meets like the basic criteria. And so some people will run those tools and they will say, oh, well, you know, I fixed all the problems that the tool has told me about, so my website is probably just fine. When the reality is that those tools, they're designed to be a starting point. And then after you've run the tool and you've sort of fixed some of the things, then you actually, it really behooves you to run that through somebody who's a manual tester and give them that report and then say, look, this is what I found, but could you run through and test the rest of it? Or because there's pieces that the automatic testing tools kind of struggle to pick up. But I don't think it's deliberate. You know, people just think they've either done their due diligence or they're just completely unaware. I mean, some people don't even see that someone who's blind can use a computer. So, yeah. You know, now I'm asking you to make your website accessible to me.
So for someone who is interested in finding out more about digital accessibility of their online offerings, what advice would you give them for where to start and how to go about it?
Are you meaning to study it or are you meaning to just find out about it in general?
Well, ultimately, both.
Right. So for the general accessibility kind of knowledge, there is something called the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, WCAG. And they've just come out with a new version of it. But if you Google that, and you're kind of in the space of developer or something like that, there's you'll see a whole bunch of guidelines and you can look through those. I also know that there are people who test sites, and some companies actually have a whole like department that deals with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so, you know, that's somewhere that if you're working for somebody, you might already have that in your company. But in terms of, you know, studying it, I really, really highly recommend the Blind Institute of Technology or BIT Academy. It's the same thing. They just sometimes use a different name like that. And they are an amazing organization. You don't have to be blind to study there, as far as I know, but a lot of us are. And I mean, it's amazing. All the courses, they offer this course and another course in Salesforce. Their goal is to help people gain employment because they recognize that there is a lack of employment resources out there. So, you know, I don't actually have the websites on hand. I should have probably done that. But they are free. The courses are all free. So I highly, highly recommend. And it's a top-notch program.
Yeah, at the very least, if you're interested in the topic, you're not losing anything. It's not costing you anything, even if it's not something you then pursue. So thank you, though. It's a great resource. And what we'll do is, if I can get that link from you at some stage, I'll just drop it into the show notes so that people can access it.
Yeah, I'll do it. But as soon as the show, I just don't want to listen to too many things at once. But as soon as we're done, I will find the link and send it off to you.
That'll be perfect. Thank you so much. So that'll be in the show notes along with a bit more other information, which we'll talk about later. So I want to shift across to a different topic. And this is one that I know that you have had some personal experience of, but it is something that really does happen way too often in the disabled community. And that is of bullying, but not just bullying in the workplace or bullying by non-disabled people, but almost bullying within our own community as well. So are you okay with shifting onto that topic?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about what forms does that bullying take from what you've experienced and what you've been exposed to in different environments?
So I have definitely experienced my last two jobs, both I had workplace bullying. The one instance, I was told by someone they didn't want to work with me because I was blind. And they also kept having meetings about me without me. And thankfully, I had an ally. So that was amazing. But I ended up feeling uncomfortable and leaving. And then my most recent job, I was bullied by my manager, who told me that they were absolutely fine with me getting a guide dog. When it came time to get the guide dog, I was hauled into the office and told that it was on trial and that it was not, you know, they weren't ever going to give me any extra breaks if the dog needed to go out and just all kinds of things. I walked out of that person's office and then was hauled into another meeting with the executive director and the manager with no ally. So here they were both pretending to be all nicey nice because I kept saying you're breaking the law and it scared them. And that's kind of why I'm also working remotely now, because I've just decided that obviously my community is not a safe place to work. And then the other kinds of bullying I actually experience a lot in the disability community, the blind community, because I personally don't, and this is not a slight on anybody. Everybody needs to identify how they feel comfortable. I personally just don't identify with the word disabled because I was born blind and I don't, like, it just is a characteristic. And I get a lot of bullying around that and around being transgender as well. So, I have found obviously some safe spaces. I mean, I don't want to sound like a complete, you know, like I'm just looking for bullying here, but I think, you know, as a community, and especially what I've experienced in the community where maybe, you know, trying to connect with other blind people, whatever it is that I'm trying to do, I think that we all need to come to a place where we can support each other, lift each other up, and know that we're all going to have a difference of opinion. And if I don't want to identify as disabled, I won't. If I want to identify it as a blind person rather than a person who's blind, I will do that. And that is okay. And if you do something different, in fact, you know, I might be able to learn something from you, right? So I really just, it's very sad to me that we can't, you know, lift each other up and the world is already more challenging sometimes for us with the attitudes of society. So like, let's do everything we can to show compassion to one another.
Why do you think bullying happens?
I think, you know, bullying happens often when, I often say, like, the bully that is bullying me has been bullied themselves. So there's a part of me that actually feels quite sorry for, and not sorry for, that's kind of counterproductive. There's a part of me that feels empathy for that bully. I mean, of course, in that moment when I'm being bullied, I'm not quite there, but I think that bullies are just hurting inside, and the way that they have learned how to cope with that is to hurt others because they've been hurt so much. And I, you know, I wish with all my heart that all of us had access to like universal counseling or something, because I think that there's really just a very, very hurt person inside them that needs to be acknowledged.
So what I'm hearing is that it sounds like there's a power dynamic that is happening, that somebody feels disempowered and is, I don't want to use the word retaliating, but is responding, reacting to that disempowerment by transferring it.
Exactly. And I think, you know, from some of the experiences that I've had, and this is just my experience, of course, it's not universal, but I think if somebody perceives somebody to have less power, and it's not even a conscious thing that they go, oh, that person's more blind than I am. So, you know, it's definitely not a conscious thing. Maybe sometimes it is. But I think sometimes what I've seen happen is people will get into situations and all of a sudden they're safe, you know, because we're all some way or the other, like we all have a disability, we're all blind or whatever it is, right? And what I've seen happen is that sometimes, and I think I've done it myself, all of a sudden, you know, I feel safe. And so that angry little person in me, that's always been disempowered, just comes out and does things that I actually wouldn't do in a sort of day-to-day situation.
What about the wish, the hope, or the almost the justification of proving ourselves right if someone thinks or acts differently? Do you think that plays into it?
I think, you know, I've never thought about that, but I think it probably does. Like, because as human beings, I think we are all we want to be right. We want to get our points across. And yeah, I really do think that plays into it. To be able to say, well, you know, look at this, you know, I was right about the guide dog and how it wasn't going to, you know, it's not going to be an appropriate thing. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because the most interesting piece that I've often experienced is when I come to the table with let's say, the last job I was in, we moved into a building that is just, it's in no way, shape or form accessible. Probably the stairs wouldn't even pass the code to me, but it's an old building. So of course they are a little bit more lax about the old buildings. And I had so many complaints at the beginning, and again, actually got spoken to because of it, because coworkers were actually watching me battle and almost like fall down the stairs. And so they would go in without me knowing and actually say, hey, this building is not accessible. The stairs don't have a railing, different things like that. Now, the stairs eventually did get a railing, but it was almost like they had to call me in and rake me over the coals and say, you know, we are right to have this building. You know, this is our building. You're wrong to be complaining, and we will get these things fixed. But, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. And I was like, what's it going to take, though?
Yeah.
You know?
So there's possibly a degree of defensiveness there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there is often. And the, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I try to be so, you know, kind, try and think of both sides or the multiple sides. But I think, I don't know if people think that we're just going to start getting really mean about it. It's just, I don't know. I'm generally try not to be mean. I mean, sometimes I am because I'm human, but generally speaking, I'm just kind of like, hey, you know what? I had a little bit of an incident with the stairs the other day because there's, you know, no tactile markings. Do you think we could like put some tape on there or something? It's quite simple.
I think so often we get caught up in our own heads and our own thinking that it becomes a personal thing, you know, that it's almost like it's a personal attack. So
yeah,
it's so complicated.
And I think when you feel personally attacked by us asking to just be able to move around in the world. I think that actually is, it's an interesting dynamic, because what that says to me quite often is you actually take this personally. It's almost a boundary issue, right? Because, you know, the fact that the stairs are not accessible, or there's no elevator, or whatever you want to pick, in an old building, it's not actually your fault, but you're taking it on as if it is. And it's kind of, I almost want to say to that person, maybe it's just time to go and think about what is mine and what isn't mine. Like, you can still be passionate about an issue without actually taking it on personally as this is something I caused.
Yeah. That's seeing the problem as being the problem and not yourself as being perceived as the problem. So it's a very complicated one, and it's just so sad that it happens so often.
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
Carry on. You finish.
I just wanted to say really quickly that I do see, and I do notice that we are moving into a space where employers are saying, look, we want to hire in a more equitable manner. I actually had a conversation with somebody the other day, and I don't often disclose, you know, blindness on my resume and things like that. And this HR person actually said to us, you know, when you apply, if you feel comfortable, please make it known that you need accommodations, because we want to help you. Not help you, that's the wrong word. We want to, you know, empower you to be able to apply. So I do see things like that happening, and that does give me some hope. I just hope that it's not simply words. I hope that they are actual meaningful things coming from those conversations.
I've had a conversation in the employment space before with someone else who was saying that what they perceive as being also a challenge is that often a company, an organization, a corporate makes diversity inclusion a vision that they have, makes it one of their values. But often the middle managers are then told that they must have people with disabilities on their team without being much given much support or say or training to help in that situation.
That's true. Yes. Good point.
Because there has to be the support coming from all aspects of that organization to ensure that someone doesn't feel that they are being pushed into working with a person who has different needs, or, you know, whose tools and techniques may be different.
Exactly. And, you know, we can't always be the teachers. Like I used to say in my previous job, you know, you keep asking me and I don't mind, but I am here to do a job. Mm-hmm. And I really would encourage you, you know, to go, I know Google or whatever can have some really bad misinformation, but I'd rather that you go and look at some things and then come back to me and have a conversation about them, because it's exhausting to be the teacher all the time.
Yeah, it is. To be constantly, to be needing to advocate, to educate.
Yeah.
It can be. Yeah, totally exhausting.
Yeah,
and like as you say, it's a demand on your time that you already have a workload.
Exactly. It's kind of like when I was going to get the dog, I'd say to them, you know, come on, let's actually, they've had 18 months to think about it. Let's sit down. Let's have some conversation. Why don't you go and look at some videos? No, it's fine. You know, we already allowed dogs in the workplace, which was actually the biggest piece of the problem, because they'd had all these issues with people's pets. And now they thought my dog was going to act like that. But essentially, I was saying, like, let's have conversation. Let's be proactive, because I could see the writing on the wall, if I may use that expression. But I could tell that this was going to end really badly, because there was somebody in the workplace who was ill-equipped to deal with me, never mind my dog. So it's really too bad.
So true. So if we've got someone listening to this episode who can identify with what you've experienced, is recognizing that they are experiencing bullying either within the workplace or just within society, what resources can you suggest, or what advice would you give them of a way to start managing that bullying?
Okay, that's a good one. I don't have any direct sort of links to resources, but what I do suggest is if you do have access to counseling or like coaching or something like that, you know, do take advantage of that, or do connect in with that, because it's when you're talking to your counselor or your coach, you do have a space that is a little bit more away from the situation. You could also interact with, you know, in Canada, we've got some advocates for people with disabilities. We've also got like some human rights, although unfortunately they weren't able to do too much for me, but that doesn't mean they wouldn't be able to do a whole lot for somebody else. So, you know, connect in with those resources. I would also say, and this is a bit of an out there suggestion, but I mean, edit it out if you want to, but I mean, I would also say if you are in any way open to things like energy medicine, whatever form that takes for you, for me, it was, you know, it could be things like healing touch or Reiki, or it could be going for a massage, whatever it is for you, do those types of things. I personally accessed some shamanic work, and that was hugely beneficial because, you know, while I went for counseling, and they've got a lot of resources as counselors, for me personally, it is very important to release things energetically and take part in energetic healing, ancestral healing and stuff like that. So those two things in conjunction with each other, because it's, you know, yes, it's important to feel what you feel, because it's absolutely relevant, and how you feel is how you feel. And then I would also say that while that is very important, I don't personally 6 years from now want to be talking to you, Lois, and still be feeling bitter and angry about what happened to me. I want to find ways to work through those emotions and feelings, and then ultimately to help myself to energetically release them. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's just what I've done. And then, of course, you know, trusted friends and trusted family, whatever you have, you know, maybe designing a ritual to you know, once you've gone through a bit of a process of healing, designing a ritual to let it go, whatever that means for you, right? Yeah.
So what I'm actually hearing, and I think all of them are very useful techniques and tools, I'm hearing a lot about self-care, mm-hmm. to ensure yeah. that you are feeling that you are heard, that you are enabled to express the way you're feeling.
Yeah.
The ability to reach out to people, whether friends or family, trusted people, or a more professional, a coach, a counselor, something along those lines, or just to have a support base to be there for you and to give you what you might not be experiencing, to give you that positive space. So whatever that ritual, that routine, whatever helps you in your life to ultimately, as you say, work through and move beyond, it's totally, totally fine. It's a really useful thing to do.
Yeah, and I think like great summary for sure. And so what that brings up for me too, again, is also For me, it was helpful to spend time in nature. You know, if you like journaling, do some journaling, do things that give you life. You know, I actually got put on medical leave for the last incident because, like, after it happens twice in two consecutive jobs, it's a little bit challenging, right? So it was funny because the doctor said to me, well, what have you been doing, or what do you plan to? I can't remember. We were having a conversation about moving through this and what resources I was going to access. And I said to her, you know, I've actually like been doing a lot of gardening. And she was just like, oh, that's so great, you know, and spending time with the horses, like, because, you know, you're not always going to find it with people. People sometimes, when these things happen to us, sometimes people feel a bit helpless to know how to support us. And so that might come across as not caring, or, you know, oh, I don't want to hear about it or whatever. But just sometimes it's just because they feel such deep sorrow for what's happened and they don't quite know what to do. But those are the times when you can cling to those activities that maybe you did as a child. You were into music and that helped you through a lot of stuff, right? Like really gravitating to those things that make you, because you are worthy and you are not alone, and you are, this has happened to you, but it doesn't have to define you.
Mitch, thank you for having the willingness to chat to us about a topic that is such a fundamental part of our day-to-day experience. It's been fascinating digging a little deeper into that. Thank you.
No problem. And thank you for having me. And again, just please know that, you know, the things that I say are just my own experience. And so if it doesn't resonate with you, I really just invite you to just let it go and find your ways that do work for you. And it's just been so wonderful to be on your podcast. I have so much respect for Lois. You're a great support to me, and we'd have so many great chats. So it's wonderful to be here.
Well, thank you for saying that, Mitch. So if people would like to reach out to you online, if they learn a little bit more about your work, where can they find you? What's the best way to be in contact with you?
At the moment, I do. I'm on Facebook, which is under Mitch, M-I-T-C-H, Creedy, C-R-E-E-D-Y. I am taking a little social media break for the month of December. However, I am going to be probably making a LinkedIn profile pretty soon as well. So those will probably be the best ways at this point. But I mean, you know, you never know. You might just see me making some kind of a video on TikTok one day. Who knows?
Wonderful. We look forward to that. Then as a final question then, if you had the power to change one single barrier that prevents us from being better included into society, what barrier would that be?
That would be the attitudinal barrier, because I always like to quote the National Federation of the Blind in the US, where they say, you know, it's not blindness that's the issue, it's people's perception of blindness. So I'd like to change people's perceptions of what it means to be whoever we are. And I think if we could do that, a lot of the other barriers would automatically would just fall into place, and we'd be able to create some amazing change.
That's so true, because if the barriers, the attitudinal barriers weren't there, the physical barriers wouldn't even exist, because, well, it would be automatically more inclusive out there in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Mitch, thank you so much for chatting to us today. It's really been great to chat to you, to learn a little bit more about your story. And we're really great to have had you with us today on A Different Way of Seeing.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We'd love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yasi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.